Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. I am your host, Abraham Hamilton III, joined by the Corner Contingent. Oh, boy, what a day, what a day, what a day. I am joined, as usual, by my man, 100 grand right across from me, Mr. Bobby Rosa. And in the screening room, producer extraordinaire, often imitated but never duplicated, the real Jay Mack, ladies and gentlemen. We're ready to rock and roll with today's edition of the program. At this very moment, many of you, if not most of you, are transitioning from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And as you do so, I want to encourage you to do so with intentionality, understanding that what goes on in your house is far more important than what goes on in the White House. It is vitally important that we understand the primacy that God places on family, embracing the reality that worship is a lifestyle typified by obedience. The zenith of worship is not what we sing or how we sing, not even how often we read the Lord's word, even though that's vitally important to worship. The zenith of worship is obedience. Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey me. A simple reality. The simplicity of it does not make it easy to implement, but it nevertheless is simple. And it also provides us the wherewithal that we can apply a personal rubric. Do I love the Lord? How do I respond to that inquiry? Am I obeying him? That's a very, very simple application. What goes on in your house is far more important than what goes on in the White House. It doesn't mean the White House goings on are unimportant. It simply doesn't trump, no pun intended, what happens in your home. Even when we have a day like today when the Supreme Court, interestingly, rules 9-0, that, oh, surprise, states cannot unilaterally disqualify a presidential candidate from the ballot using the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment. You'll remember we predicted that that would be the outcome, but I was hesitant to say it would be 9-0 just because I know Sonia Sotomayor is on the court. And she basically is AOC in a black robe. You know, she's very activist oriented. Nevertheless, the court ruled unanimously. And we're going to get into that in a moment because I have some initial observations, not just about the case, but to help really assess where we are at this state in our constitutional republic. But before we do that, as you know, our practice is to get to the word of God, to welcome the Lord, to align us out according to his word before we endeavor to navigate the issues of the day. And what I want to share today, and there are things, although there are a few things, there are a few things that give me encouragement that happen on the national stage. There are lots of things locally that occur that encourage me. And so you have this tension to where you have a few good things that are happening. Then you have this cascade of horrible things that happen. But in the face of the horrible things that happen, God reminds us, hey, it's not over until I say it's over, in various ways. But I want you to understand something, not merely from my opinion, but to show the way the Word of God lays these things out. And I'll just make the statement first, then I'll turn to the Word of God to demonstrate it from Scripture. I want you to understand, everybody who is tuning into this program, and thank you for doing so, however you are doing so, via radio, podcast listeners, those who are watching the live video stream, television show listeners, those who are listening, listeners, viewers, those who view the show on NRB TV, or those who watch via AFA's live streaming, our streaming service, no matter how you're tuning in, thank you so much for doing so. But I want you to understand that lawlessness is not a root phenomenon in and of itself. Lawlessness is readily identifiable, you know, when you have things like, oh, I don't know, illegal aliens entered our country illegally, make their way up to New York, beat the snot out of police officers, get caught leaving a local jail because Alvin Bragg and company refused to detain these illegal aliens while also refusing to notify Immigration and Customs that there are illegal aliens in their custody. Then ultimately, these illegal aliens are exonerated. Those kind of things are incidences of lawlessness. Or when you have the young lady, the nursing student in Georgia, who's murdered. When you have, you know, two-tier justice system, James Comey lays out the case as to why she should never be president, should be prosecuted, but then says no prosecutor would bring this case, even though that's not his job as the head of the FBI. These are incidences, not the only incidences, but a few that indicate lawlessness on a national level. Lawlessness is not a root consideration. Lawlessness is the fruit of something else. The root that rots and metastasizes into the display of lawlessness is actually rebellion. Isaiah chapter 59 is where we're going to go. Isaiah chapter 59, verses 12-15. Isaiah chapter 59, verses 12-15. You may recall the book of Isaiah. He's a part of what's commonly described as a major prophet, not because of his significance being more than other prophets, but because the length of his book being exponentially longer than others like Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and so on. The overarching purpose of Isaiah's prophetic ministry is to call Judah, the southern kingdom, back to God in repentance and to proclaim the salvation of the Lord through his Messiah. All right. But in Isaiah chapter 59, he lays out really a cause and effect phenomenon, saying that this is how the Jews in the southern kingdom of Judah have violated God's standards, and these are the consequences of those violations. And in the course of laying out these consequences, we come to verses 12 through 15 in Isaiah chapter 59, and I'll pick up right there. It says, "For our transgressions are multiplied before you, and our sins testify against us. For our transgressions are with us, and we know our iniquities." Transgressing and lying against the Lord, or some translations say there, denying the Lord and turning back from following our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart lying words. Why? For truth has stumbled in the streets, has fallen in the streets. Or some translations say, for truth has stumbled in the public squares, and uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. The Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. Isn't it amazing that the Lord is diagnosed by in his word that when lawlessness abounds, as a result of rebellion, the person who departs from evil makes himself a prey by the wicked environment surrounding him. Isn't that remarkable? Kind of like journalists trying to get to the bottom of what happened on January 6th, and all of a sudden when they start publishing data that contradicts the official governmental narrative, you end up arrested. Kind of like Steve Baker, or like Catherine Herridge, you know, well known as a national security reporter. But all of a sudden, when her reporting, which includes confidential sources, starts to indicate, hey, the U.S. government may be working alongside communist China, and the Chinese have made an intentional effort to penetrate American institutions of higher learning, the university system, then all of a sudden, she's fired from CBS and just so happens to be arrested for contempt of court. Justice is turned back, and righteousness stands far away. Far away. The second half of verse 14 tells why. For truth has fallen in the streets. See, truth is not merely a disembodied concept. Ultimately, truth fundamentally is a person. When truth has fallen in the streets, the prophet Isaiah is revealing that uprightness is forbidden from entry. Uprightness cannot enter. The greatest problem and the most desperate need that we have in the United States of America is repentance. Our nation, by and large, has embraced wickedness. We attempt to explain away violations of God's law, violations of God's order. When you have people like Heidi Prisbilla who get on national television and refer to so-called natural law. When God has revealed in his holy word what marriage is, what identity is, what life is, what sexuality is, yet we as people will go forth and explain it away. Oh, that's not a child. What, you're calling it a baby. Who are you? You know, Barack Obama, remember, is running for the presidency. When does life begin? Oh, that's above my pay grade. Really? The perception of people with prejudicial conclusions based on nothing but their appearance, nothing but their melanin display. That's a deficiency in the Imago Dei. Just like it's a deficiency in the Imago Dei that will allow people to mount a prominent American political party's platform and say, shout your right to slaughter an innocent child in the womb. Truth has fallen in the streets. So when that has occurred, ladies and gentlemen, we should not be surprised by lawlessness. Because the Lord has already revealed that government, rightly situated, functioning as a minister on his behalf, has to have a fundamental understanding of righteousness versus wickedness. Romans 13 says the purpose of government is to punish and restrain wickedness and to reward righteousness. But what happens when governments are in play? Which, by the way, by the consent of the governed, where you have, just as ours, a constitutional republic with democratic features, where people get to participate in their establishment of their government. What do you think people are going to choose when the people are wicked? Well, let me say it differently. Should we expect a wicked people to embrace righteous government? And there are some aspects of God's requirements, not just some. God's requirements are beneficial to all mankind. When you have one man who commits himself to his wife for the rest of her life, that benefits believers and unbelievers. That creates a stabilized society. But when wickedness is the order of the day, lawlessness is the inevitable result. Because we have fundamentally abandoned our capacity to identify righteousness versus wicked. So what occurs when truth has fallen in the street, justice is turned backward as a result, and uprightness cannot enter, what has occurred, the prophet Isaiah said the same thing in chapter 5, verse 20 of his book, good is called evil, and evil is called good. This is why John Adams said that our constitutional republic is only sufficient for holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, religious and moral people. The religion he envisioned clearly is Christianity. George Washington, in his farewell address, said religion and morality are indispensable supports, which means if you try to remove any of these supports, the whole thing will tumble. Brothers and sisters, this is what we're contending with. So as we contend, don't forget that righteousness is the deepest and most abiding need. According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. And that's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is, women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them, which doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you not only support women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life and gives her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. I'm sharing what I'm sharing from Isaiah chapter 59 because it's very easy to be caught up in the emotion of what's happening around us and to allow the headlines and bylines to grip us, and we don't pause, take a few steps back, and navigate what's happening from a broader perspective. And I'm also offering this because there are lots of people who will assess deficiencies in government, you know, who talk about, you know, good governing policies, but there are not very many people who will confront the reality that our deepest and most abiding need is righteousness amongst our populace. You can say whatever you want, you know, but if we continue to have an increasingly wicked populace, and that populace enjoys the constitutional right to participate in the establishment of our nation through its governing policies, the increasingly wicked populace will continue to select increasingly wicked people to implement increasingly wicked policies. It is a fool's errand to think otherwise. You know, there are some aspects that will be pursued, you know, around the periphery, if you will. And you know, I like it when my 401k is blowing and going. I like that. I appreciate that. But I'm telling you, a booming economy does not make a nation great. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. We need people to man all. We need all hands on deck in all venues of our society to engage the people around us with the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ, and by God's grace to work feverishly toward God's view of his world and implement this in our society. I am not advocating for a theocracy, all right? I'm not. But for anyone, I challenge anyone to defy the supremely substantiated logic. The best thing for children is to have a daddy who's committed to his mama and they raise Junior and Juniette together. It's not rocket surgery. You know, it's probably better for you to take in more money than you spend, especially when you have debt. It ain't rocket surgery, folks. But there are wicked forces at work. They are animated by wickedness. Now, again, I'm not saying everybody understands this, but there are animated forces at work. I shared the program with you all years ago on Moses Mordecai Marx Levy, how he was keenly aware that is Karl Marx's full and real name, how Karl Marx was keenly aware that he was an agent of Satan. In addition to living as a perpetual welfare recipient, not from the government, but from his human sponsor. Y'all do know that about him, right? He lived as a mooch, lifelong mooch. He would write poetry where he would talk about his mind being filled with the fumes of hell. And how that would inspire him to write these various economic treatises. That's why he advocated for the utilization of violence for the purpose of advocating political and fiscal policy. Now, in today's nomenclature, what do you call it? What do you call it, Bobby, when you have someone who's willing to murder you to advance their political ideology? What do you call that? Terrorism. Terrorism. Yes, it's foreign and domestic, which is no wonder why when you had others like Georgie Lukacs. Oh, man, I'm going in the crates historically now. Georgie Lukacs, following World War I, who sought to specifically pervert children through sexuality. After World War I, exposing them to pornography, introducing them to a hypersexualization, teaching what we now describe as sex ed, but what Georgie Lukacs was doing was preparing children before their minds and bodies were ready to do so, to participate in sexual activity, for the express purposes of casting down the existing hegemony. The goal was destabilization of society so it could be more easily overthrown. Georgie Lukacs is one side of the coin that Antonio Gramsci is on the other side of. And guess what Lukacs, L-U-K-A-C-S, Lukacs called his program for children, guess what he called it, Bobby? Cultural terrorism. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Whether you like it or not, I'll say it to you this way. Now, this is a lesson learned from the block. You can say you're not in the fight all you want. But if that dude is over there throwing them things on you, guess what? Whether you punch back or not, you are in a fight. There are people that are uncomfortable with the concept of spiritual warfare. Whether you punch back or not, you are in a fight. People scratching their heads. How do we get to the place where you have physicians? I mean, you have once well-regarded institutions of medicine and hospitals and things, and they're literally saying that, wait, we need to get these puberty blockers and things to these children. We won't let a child go to a movie. Can't buy this, can't drive a car, can't do all of this until a certain age. But, oh, yeah, you think you were born in the wrong body? Sure, let's go with it. Guys, that's that's not just a divergent opinion on social policy. That's evidence of truth having fallen in the streets. So all I'm saying is that in your assessment of what's happening, don't leave the Lord's word on the sideline, man. Because if we do all of these things, vote this way, do this, you know, go march at this place, but we leave the Lord's word on the sideline, hearts and minds are not being confronted with the truth of the gospel, how long do you expect an increasingly wicked people to pursue anything other than wickedness in terms of their opportunities to procure it? We pause for a moment. This weekend, at North Dallas Community Bible Fellowship this Saturday and Sunday, March 9th and 10th. March 9th will be, I have the privilege of participating in the men's breakfast. I'll be addressing the men there at North Dallas. If you want to participate, you have to register. Go to ndcbf.org, their website, to register for the breakfast. And then that Sunday morning, by God's grace, I am scheduled to deliver the Sunday morning, the sermon during the worship service on Sunday morning. If you're in the area or willing to come to the area, I have been told you are invited. I'd love to see you there. Get to meet you, hug some necks, and see other portions of our eternal family. Then in July, and there are other things between this week and July, but I want you to be aware of this now. Go to cultureproof.net to register for the Culture Proof Conference that is going to take place July 18th through the 20th. At Faith Baptist Church in Bartlett, Tennessee. That is July 18th through the 20th. It is going to be an amazing conference that I would love to see you there as well as we continue to lay the foundation for the Lord's remnant to stand firm and fast in this dark and evil day that we are in currently. Now, I'm going to get to the Donald J. Trump versus Norma Anderson case out of Colorado by the Supreme Court. But before I get into the details of this case, following with my commitment today to just kind of zoom out to help us assess where we are, guys, I want to tell you, our founders never envisioned that we all will be standing by waiting for the United States Supreme Court to determine which direction our nation is going to go in. You know, the Supreme Court seems to be the only bastion of the federal separation of powers that at some points draws our nation back from careening towards the obvious cliff. That's not how it's supposed to be, man. If you study the Constitution, I have a look. You can keep a copy of this in your pocket, guys. If you just look at the articles, Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, you look at the length of each article of our Constitution, where they describe the executive branch of our federal government, the congressional branch, and the judiciary. There's one of those three articles that is longer than all of the others. There's also one that is shorter than the other two. The shortest of those three is Article 3, which applies to the judiciary. The longest of those is Article 2, which applies to the Congress. It is painfully obvious that the founders always expected for Congress to be the most enduring feature of the federal government in terms of its impact on the American citizens, its direct impact. It also is, this is just something I've just been chewing on personally lately. It's not surprising to me that at the same time that the Federal Reserve Act was passed ultimately in 1913, that is also the time for the first time in America's history that an enduring direct tax upon the American citizens was imposed federally with the 16th Amendment. It is also that exact same Congress that changed the makeup of the United States Senate to allow for U.S. senators to be directly voted upon by the citizenry, because that is not how the founders established it. Initially, the House of Representatives was only the only chamber of Congress that was elected directly by the citizens. The U.S. Senate was established initially by the various state legislatures. The view there was that they had to balance the interests of the individual citizens and the states. And both the individual citizens' concerns should be presented and the state's concerns, and both of them would be checks and balances upon the federal governmental executive apparatus. The change of our system to where U.S. senators were elected directly by the citizens has been an enduring failure, frankly, and has had all types of outsized consequences from a seemingly, to us today, small departure, but it wouldn't have been a small departure to our founders. Now, getting to this case, this is a remarkable rebuke to all of the talking heads and spokesmiles who are saying, oh, Colorado may have a chance here. And it's just, I'm just thinking to myself, this is foolhardy, because these types of conversations, they continue to have the effect of estranging the American citizens from their Constitution. Because if you read the Constitution and you see, okay, the 14th Amendment is a Reconstruction Amendment, it's clear that the objective of the Reconstruction Amendment was to address those who actually had gone to war against the United States of America, like the Confederate Army, or the slaveholding states of the Confederacy. How are they attempting to apply this to former President Trump? And then you read all the way down, Section 3, Section 4, Section 5, you see Section 5 of the 14th Amendment says Congress has the authority to create laws to enforce these provisions. And then you look and see that, well, Congress actually has made a law. They've created a criminal statute called insurrection. Nobody has been charged with insurrection. Nobody has been indicted for insurrection. Yet, a state is going to unilaterally conclude whether or not a presidential candidate could be on the ballot. And as you've heard me say, the main issue from an overarching constitutional standpoint was, well, can a state create an additional extra constitutional criteria for a presidential candidate? Which, and you know, I predicted it, but many others predicted it. I'm not trying to present this as if I alone knew this would happen. I knew Colorado would lose. The only question in my mind is whether it was going to be 8-1 or 9-0. We now know it was 9-0. You know, this case stands for the reality, as a sovereign declaration that states cannot disqualify a presidential candidate utilizing the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment. Full stop. This includes Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. This includes Justice Elena Kagan. This includes Justice Sonia Sotomayor and all of the rest of the Supreme Court justices. Now, I got a question. Do you think this unanimous 9-0 decision is going to cause many of the talking heads and spokesmouths in our country to stop talking about, oh, well, we have this divided court? You think they think that's probably not. Probably not. This is something that the court, and it's obvious, five of the nine justices not only saw themselves as resolving the instant Colorado case, but they were also warning Maine as well, which is why you have a per curiam opinion, but you have concurring opinions from Justice Amy Coney Barrett, as well as Justices Jackson, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan. And I'm going to get to that in a moment. And we're coming close to the break, so I won't get to all of it right now, but we certainly will pick it up on the other side of the break. But this should settle this issue, but not only settle this issue, settle the main issue, and it should be a representation, whether we like it or not. And I don't always agree with the Supreme Court decisions. There's some lately that I've agreed with more than I have in the recent past, but there's some lately that I have disagreed with. But then there are some that are more important in my estimation than others that I have agreed with. This should be a decision that is representative to the American body politic, that people saying they want to pack the court and all this other kind of stuff should relax, have several seats, because the judiciary is supposed to be an independent branch. But we know how things get spun. We'll dig more into this opinion on the other side of the break. Stay with me.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. So I'm going to get into some of the technical details, which is very interesting to me, especially from a constitutional legal standpoint. It's patently obvious, and the patent obviousness of what I'm assessing is because in the concurring opinion to where Justices Kagan, Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson mentioned that they concur in the judgment, they concur in the conclusion that they did not want to participate in the establishment of a patchwork system to where one state can disqualify a presidential candidate. They expressly said the only issue that needed to be confronted is whether or not a state had that authority. Once doing so, the case should have been disposed. But they said, and I quote, well, let me just read it to you. I didn't want to read this part of their concurring opinion yet, but I'm going to read it now. Page one of their concurring opinion. Quote, today the court departs from the vital principle deciding not just this case, but challenges that might arise in the future. In this case, the court must decide whether Colorado may keep a presidential candidate off the ballot on the ground that he is an oath-breaking insurrectionist. They kept saying that all throughout their concurring opinion. And thus disqualified from holding federal office under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Allowing Colorado to do so would, we agree, create a chaotic state-by-state patchwork at odds with our nation's federalism principles. That is enough to resolve this case. Yet the majority goes further. Even though all nine members of the court agree that this independent and sufficient rationale resolves the case, Five justices go on. End quote. Who would those five justices be? Well, I'll just tell you. And how would I know this? Well, those three concurred in that opinion. Justices Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor. Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote a separate concurring, one page, really two paragraphs, concurring opinion. But then there are five others who said nothing except the per curiam opinion. They are Justices Kavanaugh, Roberts, Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas. Now, much to the chagrin of, let's just call them the three, the justices did not only conclude that Colorado did not have the authority, but they also established that Section 5 of the 14th Amendment requires Congress to implement the triggering mechanism to identify who is or who is not, and I'll take the threes terminology from their concurrence, an oath-breaking insurrectionist. Oh, man. It's more words, boy. And so these other ones didn't like that. And why did they do so? They did what I predicted they would do, because they wanted to warn Maine, hey, by the way, if y'all run that up here, this is what you can expect to have happen. That's why they did so. So with the three, what you have them saying is that we would rather not have done that. Why can't we look at Maine's case separately? Which is, in addition to not being judicially autonomous, that's not what the majority did. Now, getting back to this, Justice Amy Coney Barrett also wrote separately. Her concurring is literally just two paragraphs. I'm going to read it for you. Quote, Justice Barrett concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. I join parts 1 and 2B of the court's opinion. Notice she didn't join 2A. I agree that states lack the power to enforce Section 3 against presidential candidates. That principle is sufficient to resolve this case, and I would decide no more than that. This suit was brought by Colorado voters under state law and state court. It does not require us to address the complicated question whether federal legislation is the exclusive vehicle through which Section 3 can be enforced. The majority's choice of a different path leaves the remaining justices with the choice of how to respond. In my judgment, this is not the time to amplify disagreement with stridency. The court has settled a politically charged issue in the volatile season of a presidential election. Particularly in this circumstance, writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. For present purposes, our differences are far less important than our unanimity. All nine justices agree on the outcome of this case. That is the message Americans should take home, end quote. Now, I agree. I agree with the fact that all nine justices agree on the result of this case is what Americans should take home. I agree. 9-0. That is a glaring repudiation of Colorado, a glaring repudiation of consistent, regressive, you know, hand-wringing over, oh, Colorado may be right, oh, Maine may be right. No, fools. That's what the Supreme Court is saying. No, fools. Y'all don't have the right to do this. Y'all wasting our time with this ridiculous case. We heard it in short order, decided in short order, because all it takes is simple literacy to see y'all don't have the authority to do this. That's what they're saying. And don't come around here no more with this stupidity, because we have a constitution that lays out the parameters for presidential candidates. And the quiet part that the Supreme Court is saying out loud is, don't you fools realize just because y'all don't like this man that this can turn right around to where they can disqualify people that y'all do like? But I also want you to know, I thought the Supreme Court is supposed to be neutral and objective and detached from the emotional arousals of the nation. Well, Justice Amy Coney Barrett just put it in her concurring opinion that she took into consideration that this is a, quote, politically charged issue in the volatile season of a presidential election, end quote. And then says, particularly in this circumstance, writings on the court should turn down the national temperature, not up. So y'all factoring in national temperature? We got thermostats in the Supreme Court building. So we're not just looking at the Constitution and say, what does the Constitution say? We say, well, depending on how the Let me put a, which way is the wind blowing in terms of national temperature? You know, I am not a Supreme Court justice, most likely will never be one. I don't think it's necessarily prudent to put that into this opinion. Now, I understand that they're people, which I've told you, they're human beings. They're affected by national sentiment, and this is why this guy from California showed up at Justice Kavanaugh's house. This is why these people started protesting in violation of federal law outside of Supreme Court justices' homes before Roe versus Wade was overturned, because they knew, hey, if we can get the national temperature up to a certain degree, we could probably affect the outcome of this case. Are you not, Justice Barrett, by putting this in writing, inviting more protests outside of justices' homes? Inviting more efforts to cause national rancor to influence the conclusion of Supreme Court cases? I don't think that was wise. I do not think that was prudent. I do not think that was prudent. And the last thing I'm going to say is that it's interesting because it, just as I appreciate, and this is, I hope people understand, this is far more important than individual personality. Having a proper understanding of the office of the presidency and the qualifications for it is bigger than any individual. This will have enduring consequences for our nation going forward, although the likelihood of this coming up again is very minimal. But it's important for the American citizen to understand what are the parameters of the application of our Constitution. But I also think it's interesting to note that it seems three for sure of the sitting Supreme Court justices can envision in their minds the potentiality of a scenario where a state, or let me say it this way, someone other than Congress should be able to determine who is and who is not an insurrectionist. I think that is interesting for you to be aware of. Now, in light of that, predictably, people at CNN had a hard time with the results of this 9-0 blowout. It's kind of like the Boston Celtics spanked the Golden State Warriors the other night by 50. You know, if you're from Bobby's block, they might say 50. You know. Listen to this on CNN today after the announcement was made concerning the Supreme Court ruling. Clip number one. Go.
You know, look, unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong that this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules and the laws. That doesn't change the fact that because of gerrymandering in the House and all kinds of other issues, they're not doing their job on a lot of these big issues.
Yeah. I agree, it's very unlikely, close to impossible that Congress will take action. But this is now a fair question that Manu Raju, Melanie Zanona should be asking members of Congress. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to pass legislation that would give us rules for how this works? It could only be in the future, by the way.
Did y'all hear that? Unfortunately for America. What? Unfortunately for America that we have a constitution that outlines the parameters for a candidate for the presidency? That's unfortunate for America? Man, sit down, man. These people. These people, they're regressives. What can I say? Unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong. That's unfortunate for America. That the court got it right is unfortunate for America.
You stupid.
It's worse than stupid, bro. It's wicked. She is using the megaphone of television, and as much as unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong. This is the way the framers wanted it to be. That is true. We just wish it could be different. Guys, when I tell you these people have nothing but rank antipathy for the U.S. Constitution, this is another example of it. She's upset that the court got it right. And she's saying it's unfortunate for America that the court got it right according to our Constitution. Make that make sense. Make that make sense. It, And this is what I'm talking about. On one end, something happens that is encouraging. Then on the other end, we have a nation full of people just like that, that think like that. That think like that. Some don't think at all, but just hear what it said there. It's unfortunate. I want to give you one more, and I've held on to this clip for a while because I want you to see this and hear it. But it's the Mike Tyson theorem. Everybody has an idea until they get punched in the mouth. Everybody has an idea. It's ludicrous. Ludicrous. Illegal immigration is wreaking havoc on New York City. And its mayor, Eric Adams, is starting to realize that. So he was at a community meeting, and he said out loud, we need to change our sanctuary city policies. Clip number two. Go.
We overwhelming the migrants in the sign of cities that are here. They want to work. I still don't understand why the federal government is not allowing them to work. They need to have the right to work, like all of us that have come to this country had the ability to do so. But those small numbers that are committing crimes, we need to modify the sanctuary city law. And if you commit a felony, a violent act, we should be able to turn you over to ICE and have you deported. It is a right to live in this city, and you should be not to live in this city. You don't have the authority to do so.
Well, congratulations, Eric Adams, for waking up and realize that the sun is up. And they're clapping for this dunderhead. I'm sorry. This kind of stuff makes me... And he's still clutching to portions of his idiocy. I say, yeah, illegal aliens, they come in, they need to be able to work. But you know those illegal aliens that commit felonies? Which ones? You mean the ones once they commit and once they get here? Or the ones they commit en route to coming over here? How about finding out who they are before they come over? How about that? So you want to welcome people and make sure they can work even if they've committed felonies in the nations that they're coming from? Or you don't want to find out until they commit a felony once they get here? And then he makes the observation because, you know, we don't have the authority that if these aliens commit felonies, we don't have the authority to notify Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's what it just said. We don't have authority to notify them. Why? Eric, why, Mayor Adams? Because you people will adopt a policy that place, and y'all call it sanctuary cities, but what it really is that you elevate the position of those who have entered our country illegally above American citizens. Yes, we have our own problems with criminality in this country, but you know what? Criminality is 100% preventable. Crimes committed by illegal aliens, because they ain't supposed to be here in the first place. This has no bearing on legal immigration, but it is the legal immigration policy that allows us to vet who is coming in. How about we conduct a criminal history search? We can find out if these are people who are related to or affiliated with people that are in MS-13, that are part of Serenos and other things. Or if they're going to show up here, pummel some New York City police officers, and then use a gesture representing an expletive to cameras on their way out of the local jail.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.